Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Podzilla 1985 is proud to present to you Podzilla. I don't know where I was going with that.
I thought you were just going to take it out to the After Dark.
Mr. 100, Shannon Young. The Bearded One, Jesse Kimball. They don't have...
Keep going.
There's only two, though, that they do. Lindsay Wolfgang.
You got more to deal with.
And Double H, the Podzilla players. And if you're not down with that, Hunter, what do we got to tell them? Two words.
You got two words for
them. Pro time.
Woo.
Stinky discharge.
God. Does it have to be?
No.
I don't like that term. One of these days, I'm going to make...
You keep saying it.
I'm going to make new friends. Someone's going to take an interest in me, and then they're going to listen to these shows and hear me say words like stinky discharge, and then I'm never getting that job. I'm never getting married. It's all falling apart. It's all falling apart. This is Podzilla After Dark of the Podzilla 1985 Network. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, my name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight. As I mentioned earlier, with me, of course, making his... Jesse, I don't know if you were aware of this. I tallied it up today. This is your first appearance on the show in almost a month. Yeah.
That can't be right.
No, it is right. The last time you were on was like the 20-something of July. About a week. Yeah, it's been almost a month since you've been on here, and by proxy, Shelby.
The crazy thing is that Jesse died 10 years ago this very night.
Talking to the ghost of Jesse.
My ghost makes a regular appearance.
That's why he's so white.
Last week was COVID, right?
Last week was...
There we go. Now won't be so white.
Yeah, last week was COVID.
And then the week before was your birthday?
Yes.
Is that right?
I think.
Yeah.
Let me look at this. No. Yeah. Last week was COVID. The week before that was my birthday. And I don't remember the excuses before that. But since you mentioned that, really quick, happy belated birthday to Shelby and happy birthday to Cody. It's Kodu's birthday today.
We brought him in just long enough to say that to him, and he's pretty aggressive about it.
Really?
How do you like us now?
Oh, so happy about that birthday. Also
he
with
is.
Me, I mentioned it earlier, but I'll mention it again. Lindsay Wolfgang and Double H also here with us tonight.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That makes sense.
Jeebers.
No. We have to break the cycle. It has to stop.
Please do not subject our listener base to that.
I literally do not know what the topic is for tonight. I never looked. I was so busy with stuff today.
Did you not pay attention at all? I thought
not
you liked it earlier.
Not at all. What was it?
I also thought that happened.
Lindsay, what is the top five for tonight?
Hunter picked it because I got vetoed out saying that mine needs to wait till October, so...
Cool.
He can say what it is.
She says that like we were so aggressive about it.
No, you weren't.
That's a really good one for October.
Yes,
they
I
said,
also
ooh.
Like the idea of calling some of October stuff I Know What You Did After Dark on BZ85.
I don't like that title at all. I Know What You Did After Dark, though. Ooh.
So the replacement, because I don't want to say what Lindsay's was, so it'll be a surprise then. The replacement one, since it's like back to school time, is the top five influential teachers from your past.
Ah, so, shit.
That's why I thought you paid attention to it.
I very much used some neutral language. Influential could go one of two ways.
It doesn't necessarily
have to be someone who had a positive influence on you.
Are we naming names?
I was counting on that.
I don't see why not.
All right, fuck it. Well, some people ain't going to be happy with me. Before we do that, though, Jesse Kimball, he's back. I got a motherfucker of the week for you.
Oh, yeah, he good.
The motherfucker... The motherfucker.
Sorry, I tried to get it up there in time.
That's pretty good. The motherfucker of the week this week is Alabama officer Josh Hardy. Let's clap for Josh Hardy real quick.
Is this the one?
Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
Is this the one you sent me earlier in the week, though?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's hilarious.
I'm taking this from an IGN article, so you know what kind of story this is going to be.
Check and recheck the facts over there.
Well, this time they absolutely did. A Calhoun County, Alabama corrections officer was arrested and fired for allegedly stealing Pokemon cards from Walmart while in uniform. As reported by Alabama's online news outlet, Advance Local, the theft occurred at a Walmart in Oxford last Saturday night. Calhoun County Sheriff Matthew Wade said the store's loss prevention employees saw Officer Josh Hardy open multiple packs of Pokemon cards, stuff them in his pockets, and attempt to walk out of the store without paying for them. When the employees confronted Hardy, he fled the scene on foot. A cop in uniform!
Stealing Pokemon cards
and ran
really getting the shit out of a civilian down there in Alabama.
Beat
the shit out of a civilian, no worries. Steal some Pokemon cards from the local Walmart.
That's your ass.
Fired and gone.
Calhoun County Sheriff Matthew Wade said, "It is with great embarrassment that we have to report this incident, and Hardy has been terminated from the sheriff's office. He has tarnished our agency and the image of all law enforcement." Yeah, he did. As sheriff, I promise to be transparent and hold my staff accountable to standards higher than your average citizens.
Oh, my God. So that's what it's going to take now. That's what it's going to take to get him. You're going to have to start doing the Fallout or Skyrim, like, sneak and plant Pokemon cards in their pockets. Like, that's how you're going to get them fired. You got to sneak up there and just tuck a couple Pikachus in there and then run away.
What you got there, boy?
So we have to be fair. It's not like we need to, I don't know if this department, and that's something I don't know if we could even look up, if they have a history of, like, you know, police violence or anything. Maybe it's one of the good police departments.
It's one of the good. I mean, it could be, but it's just, I think the reason he was fired.
It's funny someone's dumb enough to still be in uniform and steal cards from Walmart that everyone knows has surveillance, that people watch their cameras all the time.
I know a person or two that got caught stealing from Walmart. I'm not going to name any names.
I think you all know who I'm talking about. I know a person who didn't get caught stealing from Walmart and then tried to give it back, and they were, like, so confused. I know him because he's me.
He's me.
You did give them money, just not for... Oh, no, that's sorry. I did not.
Yeah. No, in the story that I'm talking about, no, I didn't. I walked out and I got all the way home, and then I was like, where the fuck is my receipt?
Lindsay also stole from Walmart recently. Lindsay, tell them.
And then I had to go back.
I didn't mean to. So, like, back when I bought a water fountain for the cats, I guess when it popped up, the do you want to get the warranty or whatever on it, I said no, and somehow in the process it took the whole thing off of it, and I didn't realize until I got home that it wasn't on the receipt at all.
That's a free cat. That's a free cat drink right there.
I've also done that before, where, like, not quite something like that, but just, like, something doesn't get scanned, and then I'll like notice it later when I'm looking at the receipt or something like that.
I famously, you can go back and listen to one of our best episodes, one of our most popular episodes. Jesse, you'll remember it. Lindsay, you'll remember it as the Poplar Bluff episode when Jesse, myself, and Dalton went to Hastings as they were closing, and I accidentally stole a Fallout, like, scarf, which I still have, because it was in a comic book box.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
To be fair, at that point, Hastings was the Fallout universe. Like, if you walk away with it, there's only a slight chance that you're gonna get caught. They're probably just trying to shoot you instead
So they had these gotcha figures that that me and Shannon were collecting from Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah.
And, the employees there at the time gave so little fucks about anything that they just let me and Shannon sit back there in the back of the store and open up these gotcha boxes to make sure that we got... Because we were only missing, like, a couple of figures each, so they let us open them until we found the ones we needed.
And we have the whole set now, don't we, Jesse?
We do, in fact. We both have.
It was really sad. The last thing, I know for a fact, the last thing that we bought from Hastings is a fucking travel pillow, like one of those neck pillows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they were liquidating them from some other place and they were just crammed into the front of our Hastings.
Shoving other random crap in the store, yeah.
And Sarah and I were laughing at it. We're like, this is so ridiculous. You want a couple of them, though? Because they're like $5. Like, we should really get... That would be great for the car. One of them was a gel one and left it in the car and it froze and It don't work no more. Got rid of that bad boy.
You can't put it around your neck.
I was expecting this story to work.
Me neither.
So there's one that has like the beads and they were fine, and there's one that's like a gel one, and I guess it probably like actually froze and then warmed up and then did stuff so many times that it's just like hard. Like, I mean, you can get it around your neck, but it ain't gonna be comfortable.
I do want to mention the end of this story real quick, because there's some stuff on here that I didn't know. The article continues, as embarrassing as it is, this incident speaks to the risks people have taken to get their hands on the high demand trading cards, as well as trading cards from other franchises. In March 2021, a 28-year-old man got arrested for using a rope. I'm sorry. Hold on. In March 2021, a 28-year-old man got arrested for using a rope to descend from a 6-story building to steal $10,000 worth of Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh cards in Tokyo's Higashi Ikebukuro district. And a few weeks earlier, a man in Georgia misused his COVID-19 relief money to buy a shiny Charizard and got sent to prison for it. In February 2022, a thief broke through the walls of an independent gaming store in Minnesota to steal $250,000 worth of Pokemon, including sealed booster boxes. And last week...
Wait, he used the Kool-Aid Man technique?
And it worked.
He just busted through the wall? Oh, yeah.
Well, it worked briefly. And Jesse, Jesse, this one's for you and Hunter. Last week, a couple of thieves stole $300,000 worth of Magic the Gathering trading cards from Gen Con.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. I heard about this. This has become a whole thing.
They had them on video. Why the Charmander is so angry in the new promo card.
Because someone's trying to break in to steal him?
He's
trying to get him.
There it goes. There's a Pidgey.
So angry.
He's
like a cat. He can't get to it.
that Gen Con thing, this is on the heels of, it wasn't that long ago, earlier this year or late last year, that Wizards of the Coast sent like the fucking Pinkertons after people who had stolen Magic cards. The Pinkertons are still around.
Nuts.
Yes. Pinkertons are now, and basically always were, people think of them as like cooler sheriffs. They're actually just like corporate police. Like they're just hired guns.
Right.
Or hired detectives, I guess,
hired
in a way.
Goons.
But yeah. hired goons. and that's what they did. They hired the fucking Pinkertons to go after these guys who stole that. And I was just like, that's something you haven't heard in a while. Since 1884.
Deal with the Pinkertons, it was a content creator, like a YouTuber or something like that, and he ordered some product and accidentally got stuff that
hadn't
been
right.
used yet.
Yeah, he it wasn't even his fault, but they sent them after him because he was the one who had it.
Right.
Yes.
That's why. Because
they needed it. We got it.
Forgot about that.
Shit. Yeah.
Because so they came like, in like during his stream, didn't they? Like, I think he was streaming something. Or taping something, maybe. I don't know.
I think he did it because he recorded. It's like, oh, this isn't out yet, and that's because it was like a launch thing or something.
And then he wouldn't take the videos down.
And then imagine you get the Pinkertons coming after you for that.
That's just because I think he did record his interaction with them, but I don't think that he was doing a stream at the time or anything. But I don't remember. He may have been.
Now he was defended by a couple of Freemasons though. and the Freedmen's Bureau.
The Freedmen's Bureau.
They came and helped. It was Basil Marceau, Jesse. He came and helped.
BasilMarceau.com.
And afterward, they all went and got dinner with a Diners Club card.
Anyway, the other story I was going to talk about, but it's one of those, you know, we don't like to when it comes to Motherfucker of the Week, we like to keep it a little light, you know, usually. I don't like to get too dark, but this is a pretty dark story. Did you hear about the Ohio teen that just got is facing life in prison for her car accident?
Is that what you were listening to while I was taking a Hunger Games quiz?
Yeah. I'd heard about the story a couple of days ago and been kind of keep following it. So there's this girl I think she's like 17 or 18. She's super young. Her name's Mackenzie Shirilla, something like that. And she was in a car accident with her boyfriend and his friend, and they both died. She was going over 100 miles per hour. She just got convicted of murder for it. And here's why. Because apparently she had plotted the route earlier and planned it. She hit the car. She crashed the car on purpose to kill her boyfriend. And then her boyfriend's friend was just a casualty, basically. He was an innocent bystander. Yeah.
So she death proofed him. Yeah, is what I'm hearing.
Exactly. And
holy shit.
Her furry little slipper. She was driving so fast and so intensely that it was stuck to the pedal. She had floored it so hard.
Damn.
Yeah, so she was convicted, and she's facing life in prison for murder for this. It's heartbreaking. Like, even just seeing her crying in court when convicted, like, you almost feel bad for her. Like, wow, what an insane story. Insane story.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
I do have a quick follow-up before we leave this whole thing on the... You guys remember the old Battle of Montgomery, right?
Yeah.
Over the boat.
Yeah.
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 The Battle of Montgomery. Find out.
Fuck. That's what they're calling it. They're legitimately calling it the Battle of Montgomery. It wasn't even their boat.
What?
The white people that were like defending the boat. Yeah. So it's since come out that, and I don't know names or anything like that. This is literally off the top of my head. I just saw this yesterday. There's a guy in the video who is pretty calm about the whole thing. It's a white guy. He's wearing like a red hat and a gray shirt. It's pretty calm about the whole thing. In fact, when the fight, like he talks to the security guard.
He tries to stop it, doesn't he?
Calmly. Yeah. And when the fight breaks out, not only does he try to stop it, but eventually he just steps back and is like, I'm not getting involved in this. It's his boat. He's the one who owns the boat. So all the people that were like fighting over it has nothing to do with them. They went to, some of them are facing like actual felony charges,
right?
Felony assault charges, will probably go to jail for many years over not their boat. That guy, meanwhile, is sitting on his boat right now, probably fishing like, damn, that was crazy.
That was wild.
That shit was wild.
That was wild.
Yeah, he had nothing to do with it. It wasn't even their boat.
Before we move on to the top five and get this show on the road, I also want to mention that today was the release of Red Dead Redemption on the Switch and PS4. 50 bones to not replay Red Dead Redemption.
Everything I've read is it's not worth it.
It's a straight
I don't
want to port.
Say it was Kotaku because I don't remember. I think it was Destructoid. But yeah, they were talking about the PS5 version and they're like, it looks gorgeous. It is not worth $50.
Nope.
It is a straight port. It plays like an older game.
No
like
multiplayer.
You can kind of tell the controls aren't, you know, there's no multiplayer. There's no Undead Nightmare.
There is Undead
you
Nightmare.
You could play this game.
There is Undead Nightmare.
Not on the PS5.
Really?
From that same review that I was reading, it's not on the PS5. There's not.
Oh, I know it's on Switch. That would be strange.
I'm gonna go look right now.
I'm not positive on it. I don't want to say too much because I don't know for sure, but I know it's on the PS, or sorry, it's on the Switch version. Ethan and I were watching a video on it earlier, and it did look gorgeous on the Switch, to be fair. However, again, this is a 30 frames per second port of a game that is what, at this point, 20 years old? 15 years old?
Okay, this is from the it's a 13-year-old game, and 13. This is from the Kotaku review for PS5. The graphics are clean and crisp, but otherwise it is the same game that has been available for years on Xbox One without the Undead Nightmare DLC for almost half that price.
Oh, no, I think what they mean by that is the Xbox One version is half that price.
I see it. Okay. I see what you're saying. You're right. That's what they're saying. I misread that completely. So, yeah, they're saying if you get it on Xbox One without Undead Nightmare, it costs like
$30. Basically. Yeah. Yeah, we looked at it earlier. Yeah. Or if you can find it.
That's what it is.
If you can find it used, you can get literally the full edition with Undead and Red Dead for like
or even less.
$15. Yeah, because I've got it. I bought it from my store, Gaming Grounds. Which before I owned it, to be fair, this is such a it's kind of embarrassing. Like the backlash against Rockstar for this has been huge. The backlash against video game companies lately in general for the stupid decisions they've made, some of it's baffling, and it makes you wonder what the hell these guys are smoking, man.
I wonder how much more the Switch version might be worth. I mean, basically at the end of this, they said, look, if the only thing you own is a PS4 or 5. And you've never played it, and you got $50 laying around that you don't have anything better to do with, and sure, But, like, this is not one of those things where, oh, it's a game I love and they're re-releasing it. And even though it's, you know, a little more expensive, they've done a bunch of stuff. Or they didn't do anything new, but it's not pricey. I would love to have that just so I could, like a Steam sale. Right. You know, it's five bucks. Of course I'm going to throw it in the cart because it's $5.
Right.
This is $50, man. $50 is not a small amount of money for a game that you maybe haven't played in years, but you almost definitely have played. Yeah. It's just...
I don't get Rockstar's thing with re-releasing their old games lately, and it always going poorly. Like, I mean, GTA 5, re-releasing it on next-gen consoles kind of makes sense. They still have the online going. It's very popular. But when they did the whole GTA, you know, collection, and it was such a train wreck, horrible train wreck. At least with this one, they decided not to, you know, take their chances and push their luck, so they just made it as bare bones as possible, which is $50 is baffling. I think it makes more sense to put it on Switch, because if you have a Switch, if you were a Nintendo player your whole life, you never got a chance to play it. So it kind of makes more sense. But if you have a PlayStation or Xbox, like you said, you've definitely played Red Dead Redemption.
Yes. And even that, everything I'm seeing about the Switch version is basically, it's fine. Again, if somehow you missed it in 2013 or, you know, whatever, it plays fine on there. But, like, that really shouldn't be a surprise. The game came out 13. It was 2010. Yeah. It came out 13 years ago. It should play on a modern fucking console, even a handheld or, you know, modular handheld. That should be the norm.
It's like
that should play just fine.
It's like The Witcher. You know, when they put The Witcher out on Switch, everybody was amazed and they're like, wow, I can't believe this is on the Switch. And it was a fine version, but it is in no way better or even comparable to the Xbox One or PlayStation versions.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Not the same.
Not the same. All right. That's all I got there. Jesse, you got anything to add before we jump into this top five?
No.
Okay. Hold on. Let's replay that real quick. Jesse, you got anything to say before we jump into this? All right. Top five teachers who influenced us as youths. I'm waiting for Tanner to pop in any second. I know it's going to happen. I know. I'm going to start telling him we're going to start recording at 7, so he'll be here on time. Let's start with Jesse Kimball. Jesse, tell me about a teacher that influenced you for better or worse.
Okay. I'm going to start with a college professor that I liked a whole lot. He was the dean of the College of Science and Math while I was at SEMO, Dr. McGowan. And yeah, he was just a really cool guy. He turned every freshman going into SEMO has to take this bullshit ass class called UI 100. It's a complete, like, you look at it at surface level, it's a complete fucking waste of time. Half the class, literally, like half the class, is instructing you how to use the campus. Like, you know, this is the library that's available to you. This is how you use, like, this online portal thing. This is all this other dumb shit. It's so such a waste. So
orientation into a class?
Yeah, exactly. And but what's bad, like, there's also orientation. Like, you have to go to, like, your first day of orientation stuff where you, like, do all of this shit and then meet with your advisor and everything. So it's just, it's dumb on top of dumb. The other half of the class, each UI 100 section has kind of a theme to it. And this particular one was History of the Atomic Bomb. And this actually ended up being, like, a super interesting class because, like, Dr. McGowan's a great professor just in general. And he added in, like, as many field trips as he could. That was all paid for by the university, so we didn't have to pay any fees. We didn't even have to pay to stay in the hotels and stuff. Because we actually went out to, like, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And we got to, like, tour the facilities and everything there. It was super, super cool. That was just a shout out to him for, like, a class that is just absolutely just dumb. He made so fucking cool, especially talking to all my friends that were in, like, you know, different sections of UI 100 about how shitty their experiences were. I felt really lucky to have Dr. McGowan, and he was just in general, like, that started our friendship, student teacher relationship, you know, at the very beginning. He was very, very helpful with numerous other issues I had throughout my collegiate career, one of which I'll get to later.
Okay. That's a little tease right there is what Jesse just did. It keeps you
That's right.
Keeps you on the hook. Hunter, let's go to you.
All right. I'm also, ironically enough, starting with a college professor who was also the chair of the department that I was in. But I've mentioned a couple of times here that when I started at SEMO, at Southeast, I was a vocal performance major. I was in the music department. So Dr. Gary Miller, who has since unfortunately passed away, he was the department chair. This was far enough back that when I started, he was my advisor. And we did all of my class scheduling on like paper with carbon copies. Like you got a cool little yellow copy when you were done. None of it was done online, but I had a really daunting schedule when I first started as a music major and on a music scholarship. I had to take a ton of classes in that department. He intentionally shuffled things around so that I would be in his because he was one of the few vocally focused people in that department. He also had a way of I had a class with him that was mainly just about like music theory. And he had a way of just kind of making that stuff make sense. He would throw in these little kind of super dry deadpan jokes. And his favorite thing was to say that when something was easy, it's like money from home. Like it's free. And that has, I don't know why it stuck with me ever since. Every time he would go, it's like money from home. And then he'd look at us and go, you'll get it soon enough. Cause we were all freshmen, you know? And then within not too long, we were all like, oh yeah, money from home is great. No, he was awesome. Like I said, sad to hear that he passed away a few years ago. He was up there in age though. And pretty much when I left the music department, I kind of lost touch with him because I was only in the choirs. He stepped down before I graduated. So but he was a great dude. Dr. Gary Miller to him.
If I'm up next, I'm just going to get this one out of the way. The reason I said, are we saying names, is because I have one teacher. You talk about someone that influenced me and inspired me, but not in a good way. And I was like, well, do I want to put this person on Front Street? I absolutely do. I wish Kaz was here to talk about it.
I know where this is going.
My college sociology teacher, Myra Wood Bennett, who would tell you often that she wasn't actually a teacher. And she was wild.
Good start.
She was wild. She dressed up in African garb. She's a white woman, of course, middle-aged white woman, probably in her late 40s or not early 50s, early to mid 50s. And she wore the African attire once. And I had a lot of friends in college. This is going to sound weird me saying this. My sensei in college, because I think I took judo with him. I'm trying to remember what I took, but his name was Ramon, and him and his brothers, they were all black, coolest guys in the world, loved them. And I remember Myra Wood Bennett walking up to one of them when she was making a point and about like black history and culture. And she goes, right, brother. And she looked at him, and his, Ramon's brother said, nah, Ms. Bennett, black people are fine. We don't need your help. One of my favorite things that ever happened. But the real best part is when I was editor of the paper in college, and this is what got the paper shut down after I left, by the way, I wrote an editorial on the school, and I criticized the teachers for what I thought was a lack of professionalism. And Miss Bennett was exactly who I was targeting. I'm a liberal person. Everybody knows that. I think most of us on the show are liberal, but she was liberal to the extreme. And she would often put her own views on us in, you know, the sense of she was very critical of Republicans. She was very critical of conservatives, which I am too, but you know, it had nothing to do with some of the things we talked about. I remember once I did a paper, and I can't remember what the paper was on at this point, but I was incredibly critical of a Republican led initiative. And on the paper, she actually circled what I said and put, you got it. You get it. And I took that personally. Because I thought that was, I don't know why that triggered me a little bit. So I wrote this article. She led basically a student coalition against me. I was the number one enemy of that college. My friends were targeted all because of her. And I remember once specifically, our good friend Jack McNeil was in class with her. And as she's bringing up my editorial for the 30th time, she said, I can't say, he told me about this and I had a couple other students verify it. She said, I can't talk too much about it because one of his friends is in the class, and then looked directly at Bob. So then the rest of the class turned and looked directly at Bob And it was the most awkward thing. She was awful. She also had a list of names, oh, and she said if she was ever assassinated, that list of names was going right to, like, the FBI because someone was trying to keep her silent. She was a fucking trip, man. That, she was incredible. So
what you're telling me is you were on that list, right?
I'm definitely on that list. And to be fair, I'm pretty sure Bob's on that list, too, just by association, and Ramon and his brothers for embarrassing her wearing a dashiki.
She don't even know Bob's name. He's the fucking Lizard King. Like,
hopefully she just put Jack McNeil on there. And then, like, Kirk Waters and Jack McNeil, baby, sailing off into the sunset together. So, Miss Bennett, wherever you are, I'm assuming someone's probably killed you at this point. But if not, you really did influence me. I want you to know that. All right, let's go to Lindsay.
I'll continue the college train, I guess. I'm going to go with Dr. Decca. I had him for my first art history class in college, and he reinforced that the way two of my favorite teachers in high school taught us was, yes, this is how you take notes, and it will help you get through. But I enjoyed his class enough that I took an art history class with him every semester I could the entire time I was in school. His way of teaching was just super easy to be able to remember the material, and his tests were exactly how I took art history tests in high school. You had X number of slide identification, X number of fill in the blank, X number of multiple choice, and you could just still retain the information from them. Plus, listening to him was just kind of hilarious. Just kind of mashed together Alan Alda and Ben Stein, and that was this man.
Two very different men.
To the point that we were in his class when 9/11 happened, and someone came in, passed on the info, and when he made the announcement that we could leave class because of what had happened, we didn't take him seriously and just sat there for a few minutes like, what?
God, that is a whole show on its own right there, 9/11. I remember where I was also on 9/11, but we'll save that for... Oh my God! Look what time it is.
Oh, no.
It's 9/11.
Oh, wow. That's fucking
creepy.
He did have one of the best quotes, though, that an art history teacher had. I remember we were going through, I think it was a Renaissance painting we were going through, and he's like, heaven has a very boring composition. Look at hell. Hell's composition is much more interesting.
He also, you told me once, he said to you, it's one of my favorite quotes I've ever heard. He said he walked in once in power armor and told you, ad victorium. And I was like, yes.
God damn it.
That's great.
No, but he did stand in the door of our animation class watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon with us one time. And then we went in class the next day. He's like, I see what you animation students do.
Hold on.
You just watch cartoons all day.
I don't know. I got to change someone's name to Bugs Barney.
That's funny.
You definitely said Bugs Barney.
Yeah, Jesse,
I may have hiccuped in the middle.
Jesse, you're no longer a rodent of unusual size. Now you're Bugs Barney. But speaking of Jesse Kimball, Jesse, let's go back to you.
Okay. All right. So this next one, I'm gonna go to a negative one here.
Hell yeah, that's the fun ones.
Yeah. So because I had two on this list. that I was very much counting on, like, or relying on the fact that he didn't say a positive influence in your life. All right, so this is going back to high school. This is a music teacher there, one of the band directors by the name of Josh Lamar. I don't know if he's still there or not. I was very passionate about, like, band playing music and everything when I was in high school. I loved being in concert band. Marching band, not so much, like, especially the way, like, Cape Central split their marching band. It was an actual class you had to take. You could take concert band all year round. Marching band, you could only take in the fall. I didn't really have any interest in being in marching band. It was a time commitment that I just couldn't do because I had a job. You know, I had bills to pay and everything else. So my junior year in high school, Mr. Lamar talked me into it. Telling me, like, you know, hey, we could really, really use you. I explained my situation to him, told him I can't. He was like, all right, well, we'll put you in the pit orchestra so you don't have to learn the movements and everything. You just kind of, you know, stand up front with your drums and, you know, you call it good. I was like, all right. And then he was like, yeah, and that way you can miss practices and stuff like that. Like, it's, you know, it's not a huge deal. So I agreed. And then, you know, I go through, like, Hell Week for Marching Band at Cape Central is 2 weeks before classes start. You're there for 8 hours a day in the summer, learning the routines and everything, getting ready. It blows. Got through all of that. Got through, like, the first week of school, and we had an after-school practice where I had to work. So I went to work. I didn't go to the practice. I get to class the next day, and Mr. Lamar takes me aside. He's like, hey, I noticed you weren't, you know, practice yesterday. I told him, yeah, I know I had to work. I said, well, that's fine, but if you miss one more practice, you can't compete. If you can't compete, then you fail the class. And so I was like, but we talked about this. And then he tried to give me this whole spiel about, like, you got your whole life to work. You know, you need to be focused on marching band right now. It's like, all right, well, marching band's not going to pay my bills.
Yet.
So.
Yet.
So I ended up having to quit. And what this meant is that I had to quit concert band as well, because Mr. Casey notoriously failed students that, like, fucked with his marching band. He was the overall band director. So, yeah, I just had to quit band because Mr. Lamar is a dickhead. And that means I had to stop playing, like, a musical instrument, and that sucked for me a lot.
Mr. Lamar, I hope you're listening to this, and I want you to know that you robbed this world of what could have been the greatest. What did you play?
Drums.
I played percussion. Yeah.
One of the greatest drummers of our generation. He could have been our Dave Grohl. Instead, he's just an IT guy. Making a lot more.
Really enjoyed Rock Band.
Making a lot more than he would have had he stayed in marching band. let's go to Hunter.
All right, I'm going to bring up somebody because I'm kind of doing mine in an order. I'm going to bring up somebody that Jesse might know. Jesse, do you remember a guy by the name of Coach Rogers?
I do.
You remember? Okay.
I have a wonderful story about Coach Rogers. You go ahead.
I'm glad because I do too. So first of all, the man's name is Steve Rogers. It just is. There's no getting around that.
Yeah, New Magic had Steve Rogers and Hank Hill.
They had Hank Hill. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. At the time, the Steve Rogers was not as impressive because, of course, Captain America was not a big movie presence and all that. But I distinctly remember thinking, like, isn't that Captain America's name? Anyway, he was a coach, like a PE coach at the middle school. And that's the only time I really encountered him as far as my educational process. For me, one of the things I liked about him was, like, I was not a super – was not and am not a super athletic person. Wasn't an athletic kid. Am not now. But – Coach Rogers was big on kind of championing, like, people who weren't as prevalent in that realm. Because, I mean, yeah, in middle school, like, you don't really have a bunch of major, like, sports teams and stuff. Once you get to the high school, the PE coaches are all super into the guys who are on their teams, right? Coach Rogers was, like, he was huge on dodgeball. Dodgeball Friday was
Thing,
man. That's what we did. And he loved basically a kid like me who could just, like, not get hit for an hour. Like, just run around and never get hit. Because I can move quick, if nothing else. He's also super funny. He's one of those guys who, like, everything that he says sounds like a joke, even if he doesn't mean it to. One of my favorite bits about that is that years later, I would go back there for a career day when I was in River Radio. I went to the middle school for a career day. I was in one class all day. And when I came in, Steve Rogers is one of the first people that I see. He calls me by name. He's got this real, like, impressive kind of, that's kind of how he talks. And he goes, man, it's good to see somebody who made a name for themselves and got out of here and ain't even in jail or nothing and just keeps walking. And, like, that was the only time I saw him that whole day. I don't even know what happened to him, man. I have no idea if he's still there and what he's doing, any of that. He's one of those guys that, like, I can still see exactly what he looks like if I spend 2 seconds thinking about it. He's just a character. Like, he didn't influence me in some, like, oh, he inspired me to do this or that or whatever. He's just a fucking character that will always be in the back of my mind.
That dude had just a colossal personality.
Yes.
Everything that he said, especially in gym, he had, like, it was so much energy behind it.
Yes.
Like, he always just called me big man. And especially
yeah, he had a nickname.
What's up, big man?
Yeah. Well, look, the way he would do it was like, big man! Like, that's the kind of shit he would do. Especially, like, in dodgeball. Like, if I would do something impressive in dodgeball, because I was actually, like, you know, I couldn't move around real quick, but I could throw the ball hard as fuck.
Yes. And I could catch that was his really thing. Well. That was his thing. He didn't really give a shit about anybody who was super athletic. He's just like, if you can throw hard and you can run around like a maniac, if you got one of those two down, you're good.
Yep. And yeah, he loved, like, you know, when the bleachers, you know, the ball hit it, made that big sound. Because, oh, like, God. You know, you would hit the bleachers, and especially, like, if you're one of the kids that could throw really hard, like, it made a real satisfying and bang.
We were trying to murder each other. Like, that 100%. Was the goal. It was those red over-inflated balls that would leave that cross stitch, yeah. like, yeah. on your face yeah. for
None
a while.
None of this
while.
Gator yeah. skin bullshit. No, these were, yeah, the red rubber kickball. And not only that, so you know how, like, a lot of high schools, they have this system in place. This is my favorite story to tell about Coach Rogers. They had the system in place, you know, you hit somebody in the face, and you're out.
Yes.
That was our rules too.
Yeah, that's how most places go. Not Coach Rogers. Now you hit somebody in the face, and Coach Rogers would yell, "Lit him up!" And if he was in a really good mood, he would say, "You got somebody back." Like it was as though you had caught ball. Oh, yeah. I love Coach Rogers. Yeah, you get that. He gets so excited.
He was a master at calling out cheating. Like, he would sit in the bleachers, and he would call somebody's name and go, "You're out of here, you cheating mug." And they'd be like, "What?" And nobody would ever even try to argue, because they're like, "Yeah, I did. I totally got fucking hit. I'm done."
I did that.
That dude was awesome.
I did that.
He was great. He was great. He's also the only person to ever call me Jay. Like, when he found out my first name was Jonathan, and he was like, "That doesn't sound right. You Hunter, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Call you Jay." And I was just like, "All right, that's what we're doing."
And then there was that
Jay for an entire year, my seventh grade year. Yeah,
and there was that awkward moment where he was like, "You big meat boy, Jay."
Big meat boy, big sweat boy.
My next one I'm gonna pick. This is actually, I would never say it to his face because he's a Republican, but one of the guys that influenced me the most, all of mine, by the way, are going to be from college, because I don't remember a single teacher I had in high school or grade school. I remember there was one in high school that was really cute and everyone had a crush on her, but I couldn't tell you her name, so she doesn't count. All mine are from college. John Musgrave. John Musgrave was my journalism teacher and also taught me video production. He is what made me want to be a journalist. He is the reason that I do this show, basically. I loved writing. I always loved writing. I love the news. I, you know, we said it before on the show. I grew up, while you guys were watching, you know, Nickelodeon and stuff like that, I was watching Meet the Press. I was with my dad and my mom watching the local news every night. And then, of course, Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. But
Jeopardy. There you go. Damn.
But I took journalism because I thought it would be fun. I met John Musgrave. John Musgrave is a well-respected not a politician, but a politician's aide. I know he worked on several campaigns. He was a legit journalist, and he taught us. And despite the fact that we had very different ideologies, we got along very well, and we're still friends to this day. He's on my Facebook. I know he'll never listen to this, but he taught me how to be a journalist. And he was great. He was fantastic. And a lot of fun, too. There were times where, you know, I still remember the I think it was one of the first times I ever walked into his class. Because I was a dick in college, ask anybody. I walk into class before their last class is over. And I walk in, I have my headphones on, and I'm singing at the height of my lungs to NSYNC. For whatever reason, I thought that was funny. I walk into this classroom. I've got my my headphones on. I don't remember what song it was, but I'm singing NSYNC. Everyone in the class stops and looks at me. There's actually a picture of it that I think Kaz took, where everyone stops and looks at me. And he is like, "Who the hell are you? What are you doing in here?" Because I thought I was so cool. And then I turn and look, and then I see Vina Pedigo Young for the first time. It was my college sweetheart. And I just immediately, like, that class became my favorite class because I was determined to win that girl over. And I did briefly. It didn't end well. Go figure. But John Musgrave is a fantastic teacher, and I love and respect him, even though he is a dirty Republican. So let's go to Lindsay. And they say I can't get along with conservatives. Come on, man.
Since you're on the political scale, I will go with my 8th grade history teacher, Mr. Bob Tomaszewski.
Hell yeah.
He's actually the one that taught us how to take notes the way we would need to take them in college, where we'd go into class, he'd already have them written out on the board, and as soon as you sit down, you just start copying and leave space to fill in your notes as he lectures.
Wait, what was his name again?
Tomaszewski.
Okay.
No, he was just, he made history interesting. He was that teacher that no matter what he was doing, you could hear him clear at the end of the hallway. He just projected that well. And he just made it fun. Like our pre-test quizzes, we would play Jeopardy and he'd go through and like have us like analyze songs and go through the history of like within the lyrics and stuff that way. I remember we went through during football season, he had us fill out a bracket and we went through the history of each of the teams as just something like fun to go through. And we had the pleasure of having him again as a teacher as seniors because the senior civics teacher retired and he moved up to the high school. So we had him for going through learning all the basics of politics and things that way. He was very, very openly Democratic. I'm pretty sure he was one of the heads of the teachers union at our school. And we all remember when George W. got elected, him just in the hallways going, "We're screwed."
You should get with him. Oh.
He unfortunately passed away a couple years ago from cancer. I found out through one of my other old teachers that I had on Facebook still. Which stinks. He was an awesome teacher. He really was.
I would have loved to seen his reaction to Trump becoming president.
Oh, he probably...
Lindsay just said he's dead. I don't know what more you want there. Because
I'm pretty sure I know what John Musgrave's reaction was. Let's just leave it at that.
Was it a Hank of the Hill sound? Yay.
Salad. Jesse, please.
Yeah. It's not me already, it's Hunter, isn't it? Wait.
No, we're back to the beginning.
I forgot that Rogers was his, not mine.
it's so good he co-opted it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, my next one is going to be Mrs. Limbaugh. At Cape Central High School. Yes, she is related to those Limbaughs, but only in marriage, and she divorced him and just kept the name.
Oh, my.
anyway, you know, Mrs. Limbaugh was awesome. She was the challenge teacher, which is the gifted program at Cape Central. I loved being in this classroom. You could basically, like, if you got bored or you didn't have anything to do in your regular class, you could go here for, you know, the hour or whatever, and you could get, like, if you're me and you didn't do your homework the night before, you could be doing your homework in here, you know, read, like, there are computers with internet and all that good stuff on them. It's a fun time. You could also take it as a class. It was called Academic Individual Investigations, and it was wonderful. I did that junior and senior year. It's a semester-long class. I took it 4 times. She was just like a wonderful human. She was very, very nice. She was she loved having me around because I could help her with her computer. And I remember she always said that she would make the joke, like, every time I would fix something for her, like, you know, one of these days I'm going to buy you a pizza. And when for my graduation present, she got me $60 worth of Papa Murphy's gift cards.
Hell yeah.
That was pretty fucking cool. I love Mrs. Limbaugh, though. She was just like such a wonderful, wonderful woman. Very positive influence in my life. Helped me with a lot of like college stuff and motivated me through there.
Would you say
because I was very much a procrastinator.
Would you say the only good Limbaugh?
I actually would. Well, her kids were pretty cool, too. But in general, yeah, I probably would.
That's fair.
And there's something that's almost definitely going to end up now being a name in the group chat. They're Limbaugh by association. They can't do anything about that.
They're satellite Limbaughs. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that one's better than mine, and it's happening now. And in fact, it's going to be your name for saying it.
No more Gritty Kitty. The Gritty Kitty is gone. My question.
Gritty Kitty. I should have replaced Stevens because Stevens is old as hell. It's still Reboot the Pot Pie.
You want me to rename him Sticky Discharge? Wow. You?
No.
Just so I can have you say the names tomorrow on Horse Time.
God, Stinky I opened Pandora's box on that one.
You did. That was a mistake. Well, hey, you're next.
Okay. Jesse also might remember Miss Ellen Baldwin.
I loved Mrs. Baldwin.
Yeah, so Miss Baldwin was in charge of the, it was called the Metal Program. It was the gifted program at New Madrid. For the life of me, Jesse, I know Metal was an acronym. Do you remember what it stood for? Because I have no clue. Yeah.
I know it was also M-E-D-A-L.
Yes. Yeah. Metal. I'm going to assume the M was Missouri, and past that, I can't help you. E was maybe educational. I don't know. But anyway, so the way it worked when I was there was that starting in the fourth grade and through eighth grade, so you could do 5 years total of it, they had it was a gifted program where when I started in fourth, fifth grade, you would actually leave the elementary one day a week. You would spend that entire day at the high school in a separate room with people from all over our district. I had five, I think there were six of us total. So I had five other people in my metal class. And we would spend that school day instead of in our regular, you know, fourth grade or fifth grade class with Ms. Baldwin, who was just in charge of that program and basically of doing like elevated stuff with us. It was really, because I mean, God, I was in fourth grade in the early 90s. I can't do the math off the top of my head. It was a really kind of innovative way of getting to basically what is boilerplate now in education. Instead of rote memorization of just facts and knowing stuff, it was more about like, what do you want to learn? What do you want to know? What do you find interesting? You know, she was the first exposure I really had to computers regularly because we had a computer bank there that all of us could access at the same time. And it was just really neat. It was very open-ended. She did, Jesse, did you have her do the red herrings thing regularly? Did you guys do those like the like riddles type deal?
Yes. So yeah. Ms. Baldwin, for me, importantly, I only had her while I was in fourth grade. After that, yeah. She took the job as the science teacher.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But, yeah, so I loved her in fourth grade. And then we had Mrs. Robbins for the remainder of my time in metal. Yeah, she was the one that famously sodomized three students.
Yes. Whoa! Yes, she did.
Whoa! Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. Oh, my.
Talk about gifted.
Whoa!
Yeah, that was
very influential.
She gifted them all right. Oh, God.
But no, I love Mrs. Baldwin though, and Mrs. Baldwin metal in general. Great. Like that was such a cool program. In addition to like what Hunter was talking about, because like there were several computers. That was the first place I got to play Star Wars Chess, the computer game.
Yep. Yep. Played the same deal. Shit. There were a ton of those old. Was it Amiga that MS made those DOS. Like point and click adventure type thing? Well, it was like the like, you know, you would have to type like go left, and you had a visual representation. It wasn't just like the old like text RPGs or whatever. There was a visual representation of them. I can't remember the name of any of the games though. Yeah, basically. And then we had like a CD-ROM encyclopedia that was super cool. We didn't do everything on computers, but that was like one of the big kind of moves there was that it was like, you guys are kind of ahead of the curve. This is what's coming. We want you to be on the forefront of it. So, yeah, it was not just the class was cool, but she was very cool.
Yes. And you were excused from any homework assignments assigned the day you were.
Yeah.
In the middle.
Yeah. I remember because I was that kid. I did them anyway. But I was like, they were like, you don't have to do that. And I was like, it's fine. I did it like 2 hours ago.
You don't have to do that, but you're not going to be mad at me if I do, right?
Right. No, yeah. I mean, I was an only child and I lived 10 minutes away from everybody else, man, like outside of town. I needed something to do.
Right.
Yeah, no, I very much was like, and my teachers told me, like, yeah, you guys work so hard in metal. You know, you don't have to do this stuff. I was like, yeah, that's what's
yeah,
happening.
We did. We sure did.
Hey. Yeah, every year there's also like a field trip that you got to go on that was super cool. Like, yeah, I love metal. That was awesome.
God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I installed Diablo on those computers.
Okay, you're done. That's it. You've gone too far. Let's go. Let's move forward. I'm going to move forward with another positive one. Carolyn Holm. Carolyn Holm was my literature teacher. She was also my interpersonal communication teacher. She, and not only that, but she was also just a really positive influence on me personally. Whenever I had my breakup with Vina, which I took fairly hard, she looked out for me. Looked out for me to the point that I remember once I was sitting on the bench, nowhere near her class. I was just sitting on the bench, spacing off because, you know, I was miserable. And she walks up to me and says, Vina's coming this way. You might want to hide. So I ran and hid. She was looking out for me. She's also the one, oh my God, before I talk about how great of a teacher she is, I'll never forget. I fucking wish Bob was here to hear this story because he would be cracking up. So you guys know Chad vaguely.
I was gonna say, is this a cafeteria Chad story?
Yes. So Chad skipped her class, and we're up in the cafeteria. We're all having lunch and we're playing Uno like we always did. And Miss Holmes starts coming toward us. So Chad ducks down and hides under the table. He's like, oh shit, you know, because he skipped her class. And I look over at her and she waves at me because we were pretty close. And I pointed down under the table and I was like, Miss Holmes, Chad's right here. Did you need to talk to him? And Chad popped his head up like a fucking turtle that he is. And Miss Holm took him aside and gave him a big talking to, and he was so pissed at me for that, and it was just glorious. She was a fantastic teacher. She was very understanding. She made me love writing even more. She taught me how to speak to people. Everyone always talks about how charismatic I am and how I'm so good at speaking to people. I really credit her for that because she taught me a lot of things. And she always said to us, and I'll never forget it, that you are the master of the unspoken word. Once it is spoken, you are its slave. That is something that has stuck with me for ever. And she also was kind enough, we did a speech in interpersonal communication, and my speech, it was supposed to be, I think it was a 15 minute speech, and my speech was on vampires because of course it was. I was a weird kid. I went like 45 minutes to an hour on that speech. She gave me a B. She said that was probably the best speech I've ever heard, but you went like four times over the limit, so I had to knock you for a grade. I'm sorry. I love Miss Holm. She was fantastic, and I will always be indebted to her. Lindsay.
I am going to go with my favorite art teacher from school, Mrs. Wolkowski. She's the one that actually got us all interested in art history and made sure that we had a wide array of different types of art that we learned. Throughout her classes, we would do 2D and 3D stuff. We would do textiles, clay, drawing, painting, illustration, printmaking. We almost got to do like t-shirt screen printing, but she was getting tired of doing that, so that didn't happen. But I really enjoyed the way that she did art history, and it made art history in college so much easier just because she had kind of already prepped us, and as I took the different ones, I already knew a good chunk from her. The way that she would always do it is each year she'd pick a different century of art so that if you took art all 4 years during high school, you didn't have a repeat of the art history lessons. And I didn't get to take it my freshman year, but I got to go over 19th, 18th, and then she groups together 15th, 16th, and 17th century art all together in bundles. And each year we'd get to go to a different art museum that was in with reasonable driving distance. I think I got to go to Cleveland, Buffalo, and I think we went to Pittsburgh for ours on those ones. And I still talk to her on Facebook regularly.
Nice. I two of the teachers on my list I still talk to on Facebook. The next one's coming up, actually, and he's also awesome. But let's go back to Jesse, who apparently was installing Diablo on school computers, which I'm pretty sure would get you literally executed in Florida.
Yeah, I definitely put Diablo on those metal computers, and we all played Diablo after we were done with our things throughout the day.
You're all sick.
Yeah, I got to see this one like really little nerdy guy just freak the fuck out the first time he opened the room to the butcher.
You know what that kid's funny. You know what that kid's name is now? Marilyn Manson.
All right, so my next one, this is gonna be another negative one. We're going back to college.
Oh, thank God. Too much positivity.
this motherfucker right here is the biggest reason why I'm not a computer programmer right now. This is a man by the name of David Nogler at SEMO. He taught all of the upper level computer science courses. Like of all of the computer science classes that I had to take to graduate, he was at least a third of them. I'm pretty sure, yeah, at least a third, if not a half, of the classes that I took for computer science were taught by this man. This guy is just, he's really smart, but he's kind of a dickhead, and he is just the worst kind of professor. Everything that comes up in a lecture, like regardless of the tangents, was fair game for an exam. Including one exam I remember had the question, what is the name of the groundhog for Groundhog Day? Fortunately, Groundhog Day is one of my favorite films, so I did actually know the answer, but it still is bullshit on, you know, that was a analysis of algorithms class, and that was a question on an exam. He also graded on a pure curve, so he would hand you this 40-page test, and he would tell you up front, I don't expect you to finish it. So we would take the test, he would, whenever he would grade them, he would write, you know, he would total up, you know, what do you think you earned on each question, assigning arbitrary values to each of them. He would total it all up, put the number on the front of the paper. Then what he would do, he would put all of the grades on the board, and he would say, like, all right, well, this number here, this person got an A. These next couple of people, they got Bs. All of these people got Cs. This person got a D, and this person failed the exam. So, nice. Pure curve. Yeah. Yeah, to Dr. Nogler, a C was a perfectly acceptable grade. The problem with the pure curve, somebody always gets an A, somebody always gets an F. Most of the kids get Cs. I was an A student outside of this because I had the misfortune and fortune of having Ben Martin in my class. I love Ben to death. He's one of my best friends. Dude makes me look like an absolute moron. Particularly when it comes to computer stuff.
That's true.
Like, this dude is just crazy fucking smart. And so he was the one that got the A's. I got a lot of C's and a couple of B's. And then one semester, the last class I ever had with Dr. Nogler, it got to a point where, like, it didn't matter how hard I tried, he was going to give me a C. Even if I got B's on all the exams, I still ended up with a C at the end of the semester. So the one time I decided, like, all right, I'm going to stop putting all this stress and all this effort into this motherfucker's class. It's the last one I've got with him. I'll just take my C and move on. So, of course, he fails me. Yeah, the only F I ever got in my, like, academic career, was from this asshat. Now this is where Dr. McGowan comes into play. I had to talk to my advisor and him because I needed to make up the class. It was only taught in the spring, or it was only taught in the fall. I wanted to graduate in 4 years. I wanted to be done and out. So I was talking to Dr. McGowan about it, and he was the biggest help on this because I told him, you know, what was going on, and he asked what the professor's name was. Told him Dr. Nogler. He's like, oh, that motherfucker. My professor, the dean of the College of Science and Mathematics. I told him Dr. Nogler, and he said, oh, that motherfucker. yeah, so Dr. McGowan had the
so
idea.
So much.
Yeah, a bunch of the physics classes use Python programming to, like, you know, generate mathematics. And so Dr. McGowan had the idea, like, you know, let's have one of these computer science professors teach a super light intro class to Python so all these physics majors can take that, and then their professors don't have to be teaching them both physics and a programming language in one go. Dr. Nogler agreed to teach the two sections on it. And he failed two full sections of freshman physics students.
Oh, and I bet they had a field day going on about it.
Yeah, and, like, he's a tenured professor. He couldn't get in trouble because he didn't show, like, you know, impartial treatment to anybody in particular. He failed 64 kids.
Wow.
Because they didn't have an understanding of computer science that all of his upper-level computer science students had. And so then they had to deal with the fallout of that. Like, they ended up erasing that from, like, it's as though the kids never took the class. Even though, like, they still paid for it, they had to waste all their time at it. But yeah, it was an absolute nightmare. Dr. McGowan helped set me up with an independent study that would count as credit for that exact course. Fucking Dr. Nogler heard that I was doing it, and he came to me personally and said, I'm so excited for this independent study. I've already got some plans on what we're going to do. I looked at him and I laughed.
It's independent.
I was like, oh, no. No, you were not my sponsor for this course. That's not happening again. I have never... No. No, this is not happening. Yeah, this guy made me hate computer science for a really long time. I'm just now getting back into programming a little because I remember that I did actually have fun doing it. But fuck this guy. Were it not for this guy, I would probably be a computer programmer right now. But this motherfucker just fucked everything up.
Yeah.
Can't stand the dude.
But then we probably wouldn't know you.
I mean, the important thing is you're not bitter.
Yeah, I'm just glad you handled it in a really mature and forgiving way, you know?
Oh, I fucking hate that guy.
Hey, let's go to Positivity Hendrix.
I wish I could make that a name in the group chat.
That's a good name.
Dr. Chris Gerka,
I'm gonna do it.
Was, first of all, his name is just fun to say because it's spelled Goeke, but it's pronounced Gerka. But he is, I think, currently the department chair for vocal performance at Southeast. He was my vocal coach. So instead of, I never actually had a class with him where I had to sit down at a desk and do things and all that. The quote unquote class that I had with him was I had weekly vocal lessons with him, and he would take what was, you know, already good and make it better and all that. But he was, first of all, he's just one of those super anime. He's kind of like Steve Rogers, but for music. He was one of those really animated guys. He's one of those guys also where when you look at him, I don't know how to describe him. He's somewhere between, 27 and 84. Like, you just can't place it age-wise. Like, it's not clear. But real lanky, not as German as you would think based on that name, but very articulate and an incredible singing voice, obviously. He was the guy who, when I got to Southeast, kind of made it feel like, at least for a while, if I really wanted to make music a career, I could do it. And he was really sad to see me leave that department when I was. But he's also the one who figured out that I needed to some degree. Piano lessons weren't going well for me. I was having a lot of trouble with that. I was getting really frustrated. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And he stopped me in the middle of a voice lesson and was like, hey, what's going on? Let's just hash it out. And so we talked about it. And he goes, well, I know where this is going. And I know what you're going to do. And I wish you the best of luck. But I want you to know that if you ever want more, you know, of this, of what we're doing here, the door's open. And I did actually, even though he wasn't the choir director, I stayed in Southeast Choir all the way through until my last semester. I had to drop it because of my work schedule, but I stayed in their choir even long after I didn't need it. My minor is still in music, and it's mostly because of him. Where my degree is in mass comm, my minor's in music, and he's a big part of the reason I stuck around there.
His daughters, I went to school with both of them. I think one was a grade above me, the other one was a grade below me. Monstrously talented singer.
That whole family is, man. I mean, it's just, it's wild. It really is.
I'll keep my next one short because the less I say about him, the better for him, legally, probably, because that man's crazy. Tony Gerard. He was my, I had him for physical geography and a couple other classes, but mostly he was just one of those guys of, my whole like pack that I ran with in college was basically Vina, Bob, Kaz, a bunch of satellite friends, and then Tony G. Tony G was very, very cool. I still remember the time that in physical geography we went canoeing, and as we're canoeing, Kaz thought it would be a great idea to grab his paddle and start trying to tip my canoe over, knowing that I can't swim. And Tony G, to his credit, he took care of it. He laughed. during this same canoe trip, he was talking about the wildlife because he's so smart when it comes to that kind of stuff, and he pointed at one of the riverbanks and was like, yeah, I had sex there. And we were just like, Tony G, you are wild. And that's why I should say less about him than, you know, I should keep a lot of the stories to myself because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But Tony Gerard was absolutely incredible. He actually took on the new president of the college a couple of years ago because of how terrible she was and how she was ruining the college. And he got a lot of heat for it because he spoke up. But he actually got her taken out, and the school's doing much better. So Tony Gerard, he's a soldier, man. He's an OG. I love Tony. He's the other one that I still talk to regularly on my Facebook. Just a good guy, great teacher, fantastic. Lindsay.
Okay, I'm kind of cheating on this one and grouping two together because they're husband and wife, and they're both English teachers, and they both had very similar teaching styles. But Mr. and Mrs. Amendola. We had Mr. Amendola in sixth grade for English, and he did wonders for building our vocabulary. Like, we had weekly books of it that we had to go through, and I know a lot more words now that I would not have known without him. And then Mrs. Amendola was in high school. I had her for 11th grade, and she was more on the nurturing side of bringing out our creativity. We would have the typical stuff that we would have to do, but she always encouraged us to put our own spin on our writings. And then me personally, I always ended up having her for fifth period study hall. Like, I'm pretty sure every single year of high school, I had her for fifth period study hall. And if no one had homework to do on the computer, she would let me go up there and just work on whatever writing I wanted to do. So rather than having to just type it in and write it out in my notebook and go type it later, if no one needed it, she just let me go up and go to town.
Hell yeah.
Okay. I wanna prod you for more information, but we're at like an hour 10, so I'm just gonna move it on to Jesse Kimball. And let's wrap this up. Jesse, what's your last one?
All right, my final one going to be Dr. Albert Nikolai.
I've heard this name multiple times.
Yeah, he's talked about him before. I knew where this was going.
Yeah.
Doc was probably my favorite teacher of all time. I only had him as an actual teacher for one independent study, but he was the academic team coach, he was speech and debate coach, just a super, super nice guy, helped me out a lot with a whole lot of stuff throughout high school, and even beyond. I was still, like, me and my friend Allie were regularly going over to him and his wife's house to just, like, they would make us dinner and catch up and hang out. I would do, like, computer stuff for them occasionally, that kind of thing. And he was just the coolest teacher. He his PhD was in Shakespearean literature. He made Shakespeare, like, legitimately extremely interesting. That was the one independent study I took with him. Because I wanted to take it as an actual class, but the timing didn't line up on it. Interestingly, he or Shelby can't stand him.
Oh,
bit of a bummer. Yeah, Shelby hated Doc. I don't know why. Yeah, dude was hilarious. He was just a good dude. I say was. He's still alive.
Like, man, it's like you can still hear him on your post right now.
Right, I think he's like 70 something, but he is still alive. No, I love Doc. I can't say enough positive things about him. He was the only teacher that actually, like, gave me awards on, like, the Cape Central had this, like, big awards night thing, and he would always give me, like, citizenship or, you know, all the, like, some dumb thing because he didn't actually have me as a student, so it was difficult for him to give me a real award. Doc's a good dude.
Jesse got the silver medal.
The citizenship award is, like, the highest one they can give.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Let's go to Hunter.
Without a doubt, my favorite teacher of all time was Judy Henry. She was my choir director at New Madrid the whole 4 years that I was in high school. She really like Shannon, you were talking about the was it Tony? You were talking about what really kind of shaped a lot of who you are and what you do.
John Musgrave.
Or John. Judy really kind of did that for me in the sense that when I came into high school, I was not the person that you guys know now. I was super quiet. Again, I did not have any siblings growing up, so I was kind of awkward and shy, and not just in that normal, like, you know, little kid way. Like, I
I didn't, you know, I lived very far away from my friends, so I saw them at school, but the internet wasn't super prevalent. I didn't really know how to talk to people or what to do. And I was getting a music credit kind of almost out of the way my freshman year. And she really took to me as like, you're very good at this. You should do more of this. She pumped up my confidence a lot to the point that later that year I auditioned for, we were doing a musical, we were doing Oklahoma. I didn't want to audition, but a friend of mine wanted me to go with them. I did. I got a part. They didn't. I still feel kind of bad about that to this day. Like a bigger part than a freshman would normally get. And she told me afterward, like, this is not just me throwing you a bone. Like, you can do this, and I want to see you do it. And that was just then a roller coaster ride of the next 4 years of just constantly being engulfed in that world I was good academically, but like that was the stuff I wanted to do. I wanted to do all the different choir classes I could do. I wanted to go to competitions. She gave me like their big award at the end of my senior year that year. She was the only person I cared about getting that kind of accolade from. To the point that when she retired, and this has now been, God, it's got to have been 10 years ago, several people reached out to me and a couple of others who were kind of in that circle of her students to come back and surprise her at her last choir concert. We came out and did some stuff and sang some things, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah, she was the only person legitimately when I decided to leave the music department at Southeast who I thought I was letting down. As much as I like Dr. Gerica, it was Judy who I actually reached out to and was like, hey, I want you to know I'm doing this. And then she kind of talked me through that, too. I was like, I fully understand. I get it. You know, it's not like you have to make a career out of it. Yeah, she's very, very important to me. We still talk. She's one of the few people I do still talk to regularly in that regard.
What was the name of the music teacher in the middle school there?
Oh, boy, I don't remember, but she was a real bitch.
Oh, yeah, 100%, because I was just about to ask. You mean you didn't get your music start from this fucking bitch? Like, I want to say Sharp, but I know that's not it.
No, that's not it. I got my start with Miss Flaherty, who was the music teacher at the elementary, but even then, I just liked it. I wasn't, like, particularly good at it any more than anybody was. Yeah, she was great. I don't remember the name of that woman at the middle school, but a super quick story about her. She recruited me my freshman year of college to come to the Sykeston, like, little theater and do a review that they were doing because they needed somebody to fill in who had dropped out. So here I am, a brand new freshman, you know, college student, taking a huge course load, going to and from Sykeston multiple times a week to put this performance on for them for the first 2 months I'm in school. When it was over, it went well. We did some like show tune type stuff. I did a thing from Jesus Christ Superstar in Chicago, and it was cool. But then, like a few months later, in January, my birthday comes up. She calls me on my birthday and says, hey, we're doing this, you know, Charlie Brown thing. I want you to come audition for it. I want you to come do it. And I was like, hey, I appreciate it. I had fun. But I'm really busy, and I just, it's my birth. Today's my birthday. And she goes, I don't care. And I went, me either. Click. And I never talked to her again. Hung up on that bitch and never talked to her again. She's such a bitch. Oh, I can't think of her name, yeah. But I can see her fucking pig face anyway.
Oh my God. All right.
Yeah. She's awful.
Positivity Hendrix. I'm going to change her name. I changed it once. My last one's a cheat code, and I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but it's a combination of because I literally cannot remember the name of any of my other teachers, and also because I thought it would be a sweet thing. As everybody knows, or you might know, I was homeschooled from most of my high school. Yeah. So my mom, she wasn't a teacher, but she taught me a lot.
Yeah, she was.
And she helped me with everything. Yeah. And I literally can't.
School, she was your teacher.
I can't think of a single person in my life that inspired me more than her. So I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it because I can't talk about my mom in the show without crying. So let's just move on to Lindsay.
You're going to make me follow up with your mom?
Yeah, good luck.
Lindsay goes, I also choose this guy's mom.
Lindsay has a horsey.
No, my absolute favorite high school teacher was Mr. Norman Milliken. He was my 10th grade English teacher. And just, I don't know, I really enjoyed the way he taught. We did my absolute favorite Shakespeare play in his class, Macbeth. Surprisingly, he had us read The Lord of the Flies, and I absolutely loved it. And mind you, this was a time that I hated reading books. for English classes. Like, every single one we had to read, I absolutely hated, and I surprised myself at how much I actually got into The Lord of the Flies. And just a lot of the just reports and stuff that he would have us do, the way he would go about them. I remember one of the assignments we had was we had to write a story of us taking an adventure. And I had no clue where to start, but Pokemon had just come out, and I literally took the game and more or less threw myself into a fan fiction where I took, like, the actual text from the game and then, like, would write out a narrative and then the next text of the game. And I think when I was done with it, it was, like, 11 pages long, and I actually had a lot of fun doing it, and he gave me a good grade on it with having no clue what the hell I was doing. But I ended up, the next year, I took his speech and drama class. I took his journalism class. Him and the senior English teacher did creative writing classes at the Art Transit building where I grew up. And I know me and a handful of friends took their classes outside of school even. Just a really interesting teacher, and had a lot of fun in all of his classes.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us. Nope, never mind.
I was about to say real fast. I am talking to Shelby, so I've got one from her. so yeah, she did hate Dr. Nikolai, confirmed. But there was an art teacher at Cape Central, Mr. Frederick. Also, Trevor Camp's favorite teacher at Cape Central, I'm sure. So she never actually had him. She hated him so much that she vowed to be a better artist than him. So I guess that was kind of influential all the wrong ways. He told me I'd never be good enough to do sculpture pieces, so now I'm making resin sculptures. Fuck him.
Jesus.
Those are Shelby's words.
You want to end on a revenge note. That's really where you want to go about.
That's really what this...
holding those old grudges.
That's really what this podcast is about. We entertain, but we also threaten. All right. That's going to do it for us tonight. We're going to be back tomorrow with an all-new After Horse right here on the Podzilla 1985 Network. The one with Jamie Farr.
Anyway, After Horse.
For myself and for Jesse and Hunter and Lindsay and Tanner, for some reason, thank you guys for tuning in. Go back and listen to this week's episodes. We did have an all-new PZ. Actually, if you want to get technical with it, it was kind of a weird week for Podzilla 1985. Because we delayed some of the episodes. So if you want to get technical with it, this week started with Podzilla After Dark with Podcast Sand. There was a horse time this week. PZ85 Plays just went up. And then we've got extras and epilogues this episode, and then tomorrow's horse time. So technically, it's a big week of Podzilla 1985, all your favorite shows, and then the other six. So until tomorrow for all of us, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you then. I don't know what to do without Shelby. The other Shelby, take us out.
Hi.
Lindsay, hide under your desk.
No, I don't want to. Let's just go. I'm hungry.
Jesse, point to Shelby's empty chair.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
There you go. There's Shelby's empty chair.
Hey, Jim.